So welcome, everyone. Well, actually, you should be welcoming me. I realize now I'm the one who hasn't been. Anyhow, this is the first day of this three-day retreat entitled Taking Care of Personal Suffering, the Direct Path for Healing and Transformation, all in 3 days. So we're going to have to get right down to it, aren't we? This is a little different kind of retreat than we've done for many years. This is actually the first retreat that I am not in residence, but just coming daily to give the Dharma talk and answer any questions. And also, this is the first retreat in many years that there have been quote-unquote non-members invited. But be that as it may, whether we are members or whether we are non-members, whether we are beginners or whether we are so-called experienced practitioners, from the point of view of transformation, we are all equal here today, and we are all equal in this retreat. Please put aside any category you may be categorizing yourself with. Again, whether member, non-member, beginner, experienced, and do your best to be fresh, open, and to use these few days to do meaningful work. Not in an arduous sense or in a burdensome sense, but in a joyful sense. Good work. Because the work we're doing here is the essential work. It is the work of healing and transformation. It is the work of creating within ourselves and therefore within our families, our society, the world, the capability of being healthy people, mentally healthy people, being happy people, being peaceful people. And of course, to do that, we have to eliminate all the disease, the pathology that we have lived with so long. In the same way, if we dedicate ourselves to being healthy physically, then we would have to say, I have to do myself to free myself of all those physical impediments, diseases, etc., etc., that prevent my body from being healthy. From living in a healthy way. In the same way, if we want to be mentally healthy, we have to free ourselves from all those parts of our mind that are not healthy. Luckily, we don't have to, make it up how we go about this, nor do we have to do it alone. We are fortunate to live in a time when teachings and practices, thousands of years old, time-tested over thousands of years to all sorts of beings that are very practical, easily understandable, and easily practiced are totally available to us. So that, in that sense, we are lucky. But first let me say, In the meditative tradition, we say there are three types of practice: mindfulness practice, stopping practice, and looking deeply practice. If we are going to do this essential work of healing and transformation within ourselves, we have to stop. Retreat is that opportunity. We have put down our usual activities, responsibilities, work, family, etc., etc., to come to retreat. So in a certain sense, the ongoing activities of our life, we have stopped. We are here. We are self-contained within this building and this structure. But the really key piece is the unseen, which is that which is occurring within each of our minds. We need to stop our ongoing obsession with our personal drama, that which preoccupies us, that which we endlessly ruminate, obsess about. We need to stop so we can look more deeply into who and what we are as human beings, and to really see the sources, the deeper sources of where our suffering is coming from. So again, even though physically, by coming to retreat, we have certain sense stopped, I invite each of you, each of us, to stop this endless bifurcation of the mind and obsession with drama. What I noticed years ago was drama and dharma are very closely related words. But the meaning is very wide and vastly apart. So when we come to retreat like this, we are here to practice dharma, the way of freedom and liberation, the way of happiness, love, compassion, understanding. The obsession with our worldly drama will not produce that. We all know that in our more rational moments. So it doesn't mean, having said that, because of our habit pattern of being so preoccupied with the drama of daily life. And again, you know, if we get bored with our own drama, we can always, we're very good at obsessing about other people's drama. We are just, addicted. So please, again, the commitment to put it down, to let it go, does not mean that because of habit energy it will not continue to arise. But the commitment gives you a reminder not to go there, to let go. And to let go in what? And come back. Come back to what? Come back to whatever your meditative practice is. Awareness of the body, awareness of the breath, whatever your watching the mind, whatever, counting your breath, whatever your meditative practice is, that capacity to do your best to rest there, stay there as long as you can, and then when the mind, because of habit energy, gets pulled away, gets all of a sudden momentarily seduced by a little bit of juicy drama or fantasy or daydream or whatever, mindfulness means you know it. You are aware and you just simply let go and come back. You know, in the meditative tradition, we say practice begins with this second thought. Maybe you all know that. First thought, first impulse, is it arises because of causes and conditions. We cannot control first thought, nor do we want to. It just arises, like we don't want to control the breeze. We don't want to control. We don't want to control anything, right? Everything is just happening. In the same way within ourselves, because of causes and conditions, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, sensations arise. We can't control that. But what we can have some control of is how we respond, how we deal with that which is arising. So that's why we say practice begins with second thought. That's when your practice has to begin. Okay? So please, just do your best. You don't have to get uptight. You don't have to get stressed out. You don't have to struggle. You don't have to make it into a battle. And it just has to be, you know, you want to cultivate that aware, alert, focused mind. So that when things arise in the mind and take you away from where you want to go, you see it. And you just let it relax, let it go, come back. So first we need to stop. And then we need to look deeply. So any questions about, whatever work we're going to do here within, that will be suggested in the Dharma talk and will be presented in the various meditations throughout the day, please make the basis of your practice this capacity to be mindful and present and to cultivate this type of stopping. Another word for stopping is calming. When the mind is stopped, it calms down. It gets peaceful. It feels better. Maybe some of you, when you look back at where you were yesterday afternoon when you came to retreat and where you are right now, it may feel a little bit like you've stopped a little bit. Perhaps you've settled down a little bit. Things are a little quieter. So we want to get a sense of that as our base. Any questions just about the basic meditative practices of mindfulness and stopping or samatha? Good, you're all clear on that. So what we are dealing with in this retreat is personal suffering, learning how to take care of it so we can heal and transform. In Buddhism, what do we want to transform ourselves into? Into Buddhas. How do you like that? That's quite a transformation. Right? When we think about transformation, they often have the sense of, the larvae, the pupae, the kind of, that kind of thing. Transforming into the caterpillar, into the butterfly, right? So therefore you go, oh, transformation, right? It looks like this, which is kind of ugly or something. And it becomes this beautiful butterfly that flies away, right? But that's not what we're talking about. You're going to look the same. See, there are some people who enter spiritual life thinking like that, right? I'm kind of a foul, disgusting, egocentric, dark creature, but through my spiritual practice, right, I will sprout wings. Lights will just come pouring from me. Right? And I will look so different. But that's not the case. You will look the same. You may have some change. You may not look as worn down, stressed out, serious, burdened. So in a certain sense, the aspects of how our face and eyes present to the world may change. But they will basically look the same. So I just want to get that clear up front. A Buddha is someone like you and I who has freed him or herself, liberated him or herself from suffering. Has transformed all the unhappy states into states of happiness. Is free of conflict, inner and outer, is at peace, The mind is at rest, spacious and open. It is a transformation of the mind. And everyone here, whether you are a rank beginner or you are experienced, is capable of that transformation. The Buddha originally, and all the teachers and masters and all the practitioners for thousands of years have demonstrated that people just like us, with all our hang-ups and all our neuroses and all our childhood issues, etc., have this capacity for complete transformation. Why is that? Because every one of us is the heir to, the inhabitor of, a marvelous nature that we call Buddha nature. And this Buddha nature is undefiled, unchanged, as it originally was. And no matter how much dirt, and no matter how much dirt we have piled onto the mirror, right? When you clean the mirror of all the dirt, the mirror still has the capacity of reflecting perfectly everything, right? That has not changed. If you have a diamond, a beautiful, beautiful jewel, and if you, you know, encase it in mud, right? When you know how to clean it, you will find the jewel is as beautiful as ever. Is that understood? It is as simple as that. All of us have this pure, undefiled, uncontaminated mind. Where is it? It is right here. Practice is simply about cleaning off all the elements that are covering up this perfect jewel-like mind. So this retreat is dealing with suffering, and I'm very happy to be here to talk with you about suffering. And today we will deal with suffering, at least in my talk, because I think it is something that, I mean, we're all here because of suffering, right? We are not here because of happiness, right? Is that clear? We want to acknowledge that. So it is only because of suffering that there is any movement in this life toward healing and transformation and goodness, right? Because of the opposite. There's that sign over there, that calligraphy over there says, no mud, no lotus, right? No suffering, no enlightenment. So it is because of suffering that we are motivated to change, to heal, to grow. And yet, even though that is the truth for all of us, and has always been the truth, going back to the Buddha, we don't want to deal with it. We don't want to deal with it. We read, all right, I get it, right? You know, in Buddhism, and we're going to be sharing with you, you know, the Four Noble Truths, right? Everybody knows the Four Noble Truths, right? Basic Buddhism 101, first teaching of the Buddha, right? Suffering, cause of suffering, end of suffering, the path that leads to the end of suffering, right? So we go, oh, I get it, yeah, suffering, cause of suffering, end of suffering. I want to get onto the path, right? I'm a high achiever. We're in America, we like jobs, we like assignments, we like tasks, all right? All right, so we say, what do we say? Yeah, I'm going to get on. How many? There are 8 of them? Good. Some of us, you know, the high achievers will take, I'll take on all 8. I'm ready for anything. And there are many people who practice that way. There may be people in this room who practice that way. And they practice for 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, 20 years. And they still wonder, why do I still suffer? And it's because of this. Because we haven't spent enough time deeply, deeply looking into the nature of suffering and the cause of suffering. Right. So, these couple of days, we're going to begin that process. And we're going to begin that process for people here, they've been practicing 30 years, and people here have been practicing 3 months. Have to existentially, personally, intimately come to terms with human suffering, our own and everyone else's, understand it deeply and completely, and understand causation. Once you understand that, everything is easy, right? Once you understand why the if you're a mechanic, once you understand what's causing the car, the motor, not to work, right? Once you understand that, then it's simply a matter of what? Fixing it. But if I can't figure out what the problem is, how am I ever going to fix it? And that's what people do. They go to this practice, they go to that practice, they go to this tradition, they go to that tradition. They're all over the place, right? Trying this, trying that, without ever just stopping and saying, what's the problem? And what is the source of this problem? Right? Because once you understand the problem and the source of the problem, then it's easy. You do a Google search and it'll tell you how to fix it. Right? I'm serious when I say that. So, there's a term that's been developed, and I think it's a very a significant term, and it's a term that's very, I think, unique to American Buddhism, Western Buddhism. Which is the term of spiritual bypassing. People familiar with that term? Right? People have been with me around, but spiritual bypassing. That is very, very common in American meditative tradition, spirituality, Buddhism, whatever. We are spiritual people, right? And we are embarking on a path of light and love, right? And that's what we're going to do. We're going to bypass the yucky stuff. Right? We're going to bypass the stuff we don't like. Right? We're going to create what? A new spiritual self out of the ashes of the old. We'll just jump over the old. I don't have to deal with that stuff. That's why I came to a meditative spiritual path. I wanted to escape from that stuff. I wanted to get away from him and his ego and his problems and his neuroses and his emotional wounds, right? Ugh. Enough of that stuff. I want to what? I want to be good, happy, light, right? I want all those things that I read about. To deal with this shit anymore. Yuck. I want to be happy. I want to be free. I like that stuff. I don't like this stuff. So I'm just going to go over it, go around it, and I'm going to build myself a nice Dharma, spiritual, meditative life over here for myself, right? And all will be good. And we'll live happily ever after. Right? Just like in the fairy tales. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, does it? You know, if there's something rotten in the basement, you may build a very beautiful house that everybody can see. But if the base, if there's something rotten in the basement, you're gonna smell it, right? Now you may get out lots of air freshener, burn a lot of incense, smudge. You may do lots of that stuff, but that doesn't take care of the problem. Right? There's something rotten in the basement. Is that clear? At some point, we got to go down to the basement and see what it is that stinks. Right? You know, you can light incense from now to the end of time, and that may give people the impression that, oh, this isn't sweet, right? I'm a spiritual person. Right? We burn incense around ourselves, giving ourselves the aura. But if we haven't gone into the basement to really deal with what's rotting, we'll never be free. We'll always have to light incense. Okay. As practitioners, I hope from this moment on we will no longer be spiritual bypassers, and that we will understand that the path to liberation is by going into our suffering, being present to our suffering, understanding our suffering, and transforming our suffering. Right? Is that clear? That's the practice. The practice is not bypassing. The practice is not escaping. The practice is not denying. The practice is not repressing. The practice is not denial. The practice is not pretending. The practice is not acting. Thich Nhat Hanh says a wonderful thing, and probably most of everybody's here familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh. I mean, you know, he uses that wonderful analogy of composting, right? He says, you know, you take all your vegetable waste, right, and you just put it in a pile. What happens? It just rots. Stinks, the flies come, right? It's worthless. He said, but if you know how to compost that vegetable waste, right? Which is a skill, which is a process, right? If you take that vegetable waste and you handle it skillfully, it will become something that has the capacity of growing beautiful things, right? Fruits and vegetables. That waste has to be composted skillfully, diligently, caringly, consistently, if we want to create that. If we don't, things will rot. Okay. You know, in fairy tales, in myths, the heroic journey, right? Whatever it is, always involves what? Challenges. Right? And a lot of those challenges are not easy. You have to go, what? Into dark caves. All kinds of stuff, right? To find the monster that is threatening the village. Right? You have to, if you want to rescue the princess, or maybe these days we rescue princes. Princes. But either way, you know, they've been captured by the ogre. Right? Yuck. Yuck, ogres. We got to deal with ogres. Dragons. Foul breath. Dragons. Right? Most people, when you know, the king or somebody is asking for volunteers, who's going to go slay the dragon? Who's going to go, you know, into the ogre's cave to rescue the princess? Who's right? Not too many volunteers, right? Not too many volunteers, right? Why? Because we're scared. We don't want to deal with that. We don't have courage. Or we're just, you know, kind of comfortable where we are. Yeah, you know? I'm comfortable in my little world here. I don't want to go where it's messy, where it could be a little, you know, out of my comfort zone, let's say. Slaying dragons, going into ogres' caves, out of my comfort zone. We don't like to get out of our comfort zone. Even if we look deeply, we may find that our comfort zone may not be all that comfortable. But, you know, we know that from the stories that good things happen on that journey. And at the end, all is well, isn't it? We, as practitioners, we want to go to the mountaintop, don't we? Beautiful views, endless mountains, blue sky, birds singing. We like the mountaintops. We don't want to go down into the valleys. I don't want to go into the dark, the darks. But the heroes are willing to go there. And again, I'm not making it seem like, you know, we're all so grandiose and we're all heroes. But I'm just saying those are analogies, parables for this journey of transformation. One has to deal with the darkness, with the fears, with the suffering, with the childhood issues. Before one can ascend the mountain. So is that clear? Anybody want to stand up for spiritual bypass? Please state your case. Good. I'm glad we've gotten rid of that one. Now we can really begin to practice. So again, I'll be giving three Dharma talks, and today I want to deal with suffering. Remember, cause of suffering, end of suffering, path that leads. Suffering is the key one. Okay, the Buddha said it first. You know, if we think that he had some kind of wisdom, some kind of understanding, we're going to go, why did he begin there? Why didn't he begin with happiness, right? Why didn't he begin with just the path? Why was the first noble truth suffering? Okay. So the first thing I want to talk to you about a little bit is this word suffering. Okay, because in English, suffering kind of it's like big, right? I mean, when we think of suffering, we think of kind of real pain, right? Emotional pain, physical pain, you know. So it has that very intense connotation. So in that case, it is the wrong word, actually. Unfortunately or fortunately, when the early translators of Buddhism were translating the word in Sanskrit and Pali that they were referring to, they looked in the English lexicon and they came up with suffering. But again, it is wrong. So we can either not call, you know, we can do two things. We can either use the original word, which is dukkha, D-U-K-K-A or D-U-K-K-A-H-A, or we can redefine suffering. So, I mean, I don't know which one to do. You know, some people just go, let's just call it dukkha, define what dukkha is, and just use dukkha. Or else, let's talk about the English word suffering, but give it a wider context. I have not resolved that, so I don't know what to do. So I can't be definitive today. But what I can say is the word dukkha is much more encompassing of the human condition than just suffering. In a certain sense, we could say all mind states that humans experience that are not mind states of joy, happiness, peaceful ease, openness, right? If we say that's a non-suffering mind, right? There's no suffering present in a mind that's at ease, that's open, that's peaceful. No conflict, no struggle. If we say that's a mind in which no suffering is present, then any other mind state, we could say, is suffering. So when you see it in that way, it becomes quite big. So we find more in these last translations, and people have begun to, you know, that in the last 10, 15, 20 years, many more, the scholarship in Buddhism has just increased significantly, as well as there are many people who are practitioners of Buddhism, who also are in academia, or they're just good translators. Now often you'll see in texts that dukkha is not translated as suffering; it's translated as unsatisfactoriness, dissatisfaction. I once heard somebody said that dukkha, the root of the word dukkha, and I don't know if it's true or not, so don't quote me, in Sanskrit or Pali, refers to a wheel that's not running true on its axle. You know, when a wheel is not running true on its axle, there's a little bit of wobble and a little bit of friction. It's never running true. You know, when the wheel is running true, there's what? Ease. Right? Just ease. So when the wheel isn't running true on the axle, there's a little bit of friction, a little bit of wobble. That's dukkha. You know, Buddhism would not exist. The Buddha would have never, Shakyamuni, at that time called Siddhartha, would have never embarked on his existential quest for meaning in life if he had not noticed that there was suffering in life, right? You all know that. This is important. I think if we look to the Buddhist path for some side of guidance, and if we look even going back thousands of years to the Buddha's life and his awakening as something that inspires us and instructs us, I think it's important to understand that his whole quote-unquote spiritual search began with his encounter with suffering, right? Everybody knows the story of the Buddha, right? Anybody does not know the story of the Buddha, don't be ashamed or embarrassed. So again, very simply, Buddha had a good life, comfortable life, easy life, right? He was a happy guy, right? Just like maybe many of us think we are. But he really was supposedly happy, young, happy, youthful, status. There had been, according to what we know, there's hardly any suffering in his life at all. And then he encountered what in Buddhism are called the big sufferings, the gross sufferings. He encountered a sick person, an old person, and a dead person. The big stuff, right? Sickness, old age, and death. Big stuff for who? For us. for every human being, right? Because those conditions, we have bodies, bodies are prone to sickness. No matter how well we take care of, I mean, people who don't take care of them are prone to lots of sickness, right? But even those of us who take good care of our bodies and eat healthy and are vegetarians and take all the supplements and exercise and all that, we still what? Get sick, don't we? We still have disease, don't we? Serious ones. Right? And again, no matter how well we exercise, blah, 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 we all are subject to aging. Right? The deterioration of the body. And we all are going to die. Everybody in this room. At some point in the future, which means from next 1 minute from now to some indefinite time, all of us will be exiting this world. Which means all the people, all the things, all the goals, all the objectives, all the things we strive for, all the things we suffered for, all the things we loved, all the things we hated, you know, all gone. Right? And this body that we have obsessively taken care of, that we have been so concerned about, and how it looks, and how people, how it looks to others, you know what I mean? It'll be putrefaction. And that's the truth. That's just not a dismal take on things. It's not pessimism. That's the truth. That's a fact. And so the Buddha, when he encountered these things, you know, from his place of ease and comfort and youth and happiness, went, wow. Again, this wasn't his own. He actually saw, and he asked his charioteer to explain it to him. I mean, that's how naive he was. That's how pampered he was, right? That's how privileged he was. Supposedly, he had not ever seen these things. And he has his charioteer, who was a kind of an ordinary guy, you know, been out in the world. You know, what is that? Ooh, he's sort of a sick person. Like, what is that? Sort of an old person. Ooh, what is that? Sort of a dead person on the way to the funeral pyre. What is that? And his charioteer told him. And then the Buddha asked an obvious question. I mean, it wasn't just seeing that made him think. It was when he said, "You see, is that going to happen to me?" Right? It became personal. Is that going to, you know what I mean? Because you can go, "Oh yeah," right? Can you see? Well, we're all very smart people in this room, right? And we go, "Oh yeah, I know," right? Everybody can go, "Of course, Fred, you're absolutely right. We all know that, right? Sickness, old age, death, right? We know that. Fact of life, right? Oh, but is it going to happen to me?" Now that has implications. Which if we think it's only... You see, if I'm over here thinking, well, I mean, these poor people. I mean, I feel deep compassion for all of you. You know, because here you are living your lives, and even as you're doing it, you know, you're going to get sick, and you're going to get old, and you're going to die, and I can feel for you. You see? I can be a very compassionate, understanding, caring human being. But when I go, it's going to happen to me too, then it has implications, profound implications for life, and how we lead our life, and what we're doing. Can you see that? And the Buddha, well, Siddhartha, he wasn't the Buddha, it was Siddhartha. That's what happened to him. When he got, please understand, it's not like we do it. See, we go, "Oh yeah, I understand that." We take him as facts and we process through our intellect and we go, "Oh, I understand that," right? On to the next. What's the second noble truth? And that's the way we are. We just turn the page. We got to stop. Like Siddhartha did. And, you know, what are the implications for me and my life and my values and what I do and how I spend my energies and, you know, what it's all about? Right? That's the difference between... That is why Siddhartha became the Buddha and we're still here. Because we didn't stop. When we first got that message, and said, what does this mean for me? And then you might go, and for everybody I love, everybody I'm involved in, they're going to get sick. They're going to go old. I mean, you know, they're beautiful now, but 20 years from now, 10 years from now, ooh. Right? I mean, I'm going to have to look at that. Including the person in the mirror. Yeah. So luckily, the Buddha was not like us, looked at life deeply, and, you know, provoked a deep existential crisis with him that he could not resolve. Right? We could actually probably say he went into a deep depression, probably. Right? Because we know that life had no meaning anymore. He seemed to suffer what in psychologists call anhedonia. I mean, he couldn't take pleasure. You know, they'd still have the parties and you know the whole deal, and it was kind of flat for him. Right? It kind of lost its pleasure because he was going, you know, what's this all about? So we know. That eventually he could not resolve his issues within the context of his life. There were no answers there for him. Just confusion and suffering. And so he left his home. He left his comfort zone, didn't he? And he went upon a search. And we know for 6 years, and you all know the story, but I think the meaning of it is important. For 6 years, he diligently searched among the teachers and the teachings of his time to look for a resolution of this burning issue within himself. It was his issue. And he was so uncompromising that even after studying, practicing with all the great teachers of his area and time, and realizing that not one of them was really capable of really answering his questions, did he finally follow his own inner instincts to just look deeply within his own mind, his own experience. And we know that that is what precipitated his great awakening, his great liberation. I say that to you because if you are a follower of this Dharma, then we need to learn not just from the teachings, but from the experience, life, real life experience of someone like Siddhartha. Again, he began by looking deeply into suffering and what that implications were for his life. And he was uncompromising in his desire to be free of suffering, right? To be liberated from suffering. Okay? So let's talk a little bit about this word suffering. Okay, are there any questions about anything that's been said so far? Yeah, I think it's all kind of clear, kind of simple. Just checking. So we go to noon. Okay. So in traditionally in Buddhism. Suffering. Now again, suffering meaning everything, right? Dissatisfaction, unsatisfactoriness of life, gross sufferings of life, painfulness of life, psychological depression, anxiety, you know, childhood issue, trauma, unhappiness, stress, you know, right? All of that is suffering. You want to be liberated from all of that. But just to help us see the kind of how it unfolds, Buddhism kind of divides things into three types of suffering, right? And the first type is called the suffering of suffering. Like this is the stuff that we probably usually call suffering, right? So in the morning you chanted the five remembrances, right? So the five, sickness, old age, death, being separated from, all that stuff, loss, violence, war, misery, right? That's all that is called the suffering of suffering, right? Which is clearly identified probably unanimously among beings in all different countries. They would call that, all those states, right? Suffering, right? Nobody wants to get sick, right? Anybody here want to get sick? No, nobody wants to get sick. Anybody here want to grow old? No. Anybody here want to die? No. I mean, we'd rather to stay young and beautiful and healthy and have all our possessions and all. We want the good times to go on forever, right? So all the things that interrupt that in a big way and that hurt us, pain, emotional, physical, we call that the suffering of suffering. The second grouping of sufferings, and I'm saying this because hopefully in the meditations during the day, people will be looking deeply into how this is present in each of our life. Okay. Again, because the Buddha, he was not a philosopher, per se. He was somebody, in other words, he did not come to his conclusions by going through a process of intellectual, analytical, logical analysis and progression. He looked at life, and he drew his conclusions from life. Okay. So he saw that these sufferings of suffering, these big stuff, was present everywhere, right? Everywhere. At one time, they're not constant, but to be born a human being, to have a human body, us, our loved ones, our children, our parents, our grandparents, our friends, everyone is subject to these sufferings. Right? And again, if you look at your life and you go, well, gee, I've had a great life. None of this has happened to me. I assure you, if you start looking beyond yourself, and your families, your friends, your society, you pick up a newspaper every day, you cannot help. Right? And we cannot even talk about, usually the teachings relate to the human realm, but there's great suffering in the animal realm, much of it caused by us. The planet is suffering, we are told. Right? People who talk to us about climate change, there's great suffering. Suffering of suffering. Poverty. Injustice. War. Can you see? I'm not being a pessimist. I'm not just looking on the dark side. But I'm saying we have to acknowledge this kind of suffering is very, it's an epidemic. Right? We could call it an epidemic in this world. And it doesn't mean it's like a lot of epidemics, it's not everywhere, everyone at the same time. But we see it flare, all of a sudden, we pick up the paper, great suffering over here, earthquake, war, hurricane, right? Tornadoes, right? Bam, right? Famine, right? Millions, 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 millions of people. Incredible suffering. Then maybe gets a little better there, right? And all of a sudden somewhere else it pops up. Floods. Do I need suffering of suffering? Part of the human condition. Now the next category is often called the suffering of change. Now this is very unique. Because when the teachers talk about the suffering of change, they're talking about what the rest of us call ordinary life. Right? The rest of us call that ordinary life. In ordinary life, right, it's our life, the way we through the world, there are these what's called in Buddhism the eight worldly winds. People know the eight worldly winds. You know, winds. Winds are things. Oh, see, impermanence. I'm sure these carpets are easily cleaned. What? Yeah. Anyhow. Suffering, now we're trying to make the suffering not so bad. Anyhow. So there are these eight... There are these eight worldly winds that blow through the world, right? And you know, when the wind blows, what happens? The leaves move. The branches move. The trees sway. Sometimes the leaves are blown off. The branches are blown down. Sometimes the winds blow the trees and they fall on the house, right? So there are these winds that blow through our life, right? And they cause movement. It causes movement among us beings. And these are the winds that blow human beings are the winds like I want to be liked. I don't want to be disliked. I want to be noticed. I don't want to be ignored. I want to get. I want to gain. I don't want to lose. I want things to go up. I don't want things to go down. I want to love. I don't want to not be loved. I want to have things, but I don't want to lose things. I want to have pleasure, happiness, enjoyment, but I don't want to have boredom, non-pleasure, pain. So we might say that this wanting to be loved, wanting to be liked, wanting to gain, wanting to have pleasure, you know what I'm saying? All these things are the things that what? That move us, right? In life. Right? If you can think about the movement of life to have a career, to earn money, to have relationships, to get married, to, you know, the whole, you know, to rise up, right? And to have, to buy things and more things, right? That's all. Can you see? That's what motivates most people. At the same time, we don't want that, right? So at the same time, we want to move our life in the direction. We do a lot to avoid, or we get upset when the stuff we don't want comes into our life, right? Or may come into our life, or is in our life. So we got to get it out of our life. Or we have lots of things, right? Like I am moving up the chain of command, but I always could go down again, couldn't I? Or there could be somebody who gains on me, right? I mean, I've gotten things, but I could lose them, right? So there's always kind of some anxiety, right? We're never at peace as these winds blow through us, because we have to work very hard, don't we? To get, right? To get noticed. You know, you walk, you come to retreat and you go, Hey, how come everybody's noticing her, but no one's noticing me? No one's paying me any attention, right? I feel kind of anonymous here. Nobody knows me. See, we don't like that feeling, do we? And the other ones come in, know lots of people. We greet everybody. We feel great. But we don't understand that that feeling great because we're noticed and liked is directly related to the other. If we want this, we don't want that. Right? So even when we get what we want, we are dragging along the opposite. Can you see that? That's called the world of duality. Right? You can't have one without the other. Right? You know, there's a whole universe of people who pay very close attention to the stock market, right? And they're happy when? When it goes up, right? When it goes down, they get what? Unhappy, right? Anxious. It better go up. But it might go down, right? House values, we live in Florida, right? This is like a state of obsession. House values, how do we want them to go? Up, right? Do we want them to go down? But there's always a chance they may. We can't control it, so what's going to happen? When they go down, then we're what? Unhappy. And we don't realize you can't have one without the other. You can't have up without down. Right? If all you want to do is be liked, then you're not going to like to be not liked. Right? If all you want in life is pleasure, and you're working very hard to get more pleasure, more beautiful things, not going to be happy when you don't have it or when the opposite comes in. I mean, I could go on and on. But is that clear? We call that ordinary life, don't we? That's what everybody's living. That's what people are doing. That's the winds that are blowing through our world. And the Buddha called that dukkha. He said that's suffering. That's suffering. It's up and down and back and forth, and there's always underneath it an underlying anxiety, an underlying unease. You're never at peace. You're never comfortable. You're never, you know, at ease. You're always scanning. So it's important that we see that just the fact that life cannot be controlled and that things are impermanent and always changing and always have the capability of going in every direction. This is suffering because it doesn't produce ease, you know. It doesn't produce happiness. This is important to look at because many of us are living this life. Even if we're so-called spiritual people, we're still living this life. And our ups and downs and happinesses and sadness and ease and our attachments and aversions are all based on this. So this is another suffering. Called the suffering of change. Now the third kind of suffering is a little deeper and a little more difficult to understand. It's often called the suffering of composite things. And there are many different ways to understand that. I mean, some look at that and say that even if the other two did not exist, the suffering of suffering and the suffering of change, just being this a human being is a source of suffering. Because what a human being in Buddhist psychology is a composite of what's called five skandhas, five heaps, form, feeling, sensations, mental perceptions, mental formations, consciousness. They're different kind of things, different kind of processes that are all variables that have lots of interacting variables and lots of parts and conditions, right? And just the way they are working, they are always subject to change. Even intrinsically, just who and what we are as a human being, because we are made up of parts. And these parts, again, are made up of many other parts. Just that, in and of itself, means there's always going to be something going on. But I think the way I kind of look at that deeper suffering is... It really has to do with the experience that unenlightened human beings have, that they are a separate self. That just the inner experience of perceiving, identifying yourself as separate, separate from the whole, just that. No matter, you know, like even if you got everything else together, right? Even if you got the other ones perfectly together, as long as that which was experiencing all that perceived itself as a self, as a me, separate from the whole, right? That, and you know, we, you know, there are words, I think, that gets to that, you know. That philosophers, you know, existential angst, you know, you hear about that kind of, or that kind of, you know, alienation, you know, different kind of concepts that philosophers posit, that somehow underneath it all, right, it's like in the very depth of our soul, our being, whatever you want to call it, there is this kind of suffering that comes from, or... say it's like a loneliness. It's like something's missing, even when everything is present, even when everything is working. I think if we're honest, at least some deep sense, there is this sense of incompleteness. It's deep. Most people never even touch it. They react to it. They act from it. But they don't realize, or we could say it's a kind of emptiness, meaninglessness. Kind of core of people's being that comes from this identification that they are a self, a me, a Fred, separate from the whole, not connected. Maybe that's another way people just feel, you know, maybe that's why people are always trying to get connected, because underneath there's a sense of disconnection. So this third aspect of dukkha, suffering, is very deep and profound. So if you put all of these together, and I could talk a lot more, if you put all this together, you come up with, this is all dukkha. This is all the human condition. And this is what the Buddha and the practitioners of thousands of years have looked deeply at. This is the basement. The basement that we don't want to go to. We keep that door locked. We keep it closed. We like it up here on the first floor, right? everything's nicely painted, pictures on the wall. If I get bored, I can always turn on the TV or turn on the internet. You know what I'm saying? I can always call somebody up, always go shopping, always go buy something, always go on a vacation, right? Things get rough. But we don't want to go into the basement. We don't want to look deeply. What is the source of our restlessness? What is the source of our boredom? What is the source of our unhappiness? What is the source of our suffering? But first you have to be willing to say what? Like the Buddha. As a human being, I am participating, experiencing all these types of suffering. And not only I, but everyone else. If I do not come into reality and see things clearly, then I'll never turn away. I'll never have the energy and the interest in really moving my life in a different direction, toward happiness, toward meaning, toward fulfillment, in a deeper way that this world can never give us. And that's a key thing, because the lie of this world is what? If you do achieve these things, then you'll be what? Happy. I mean, this is the lie, and everybody here believes it. We grow up with it. We're indoctrinated with it. And every time we you know, it's just everywhere, right? Because everybody in this world is searching for something, right? They're searching for money. They're searching for things. They're searching for status. They're searching for fame, they're searching for power, they're searching for love, they're searching for, right? Everybody's very busy. Have you noticed that? Busy, working really hard. I would imagine everyone here has been working very hard in this life to get. And so the question we have to ask ourselves very realistically: if you have spent lots of energy, right, and getting a career, and getting things, and working your way up, and getting in relations, you know, getting everything you're supposed to get, right, and working very hard, hours, all kind of obstacles, all kinds of challenges. Sometimes you're just exhausted, stressed, and yet what? We never stop, do we? We'll, you know, give me a pill. Give me a drink. Give me something, so I can keep going. Right? Depression? Well, maybe there's a reason you're depressed. No, give me a pill. Give me a drink. Give me a drug. Right? You see what you're saying? We would just, you know, give me more. You know, give me. You know, we just. So the meaning of the Buddha's life is he stopped, didn't he? And he looked for answers outside the cage. There are no answers in the cage, are there? And the cage is only what? What's that thing goes round and round? Not treadmill? No. I mean, right? There's no answers there. There's only what? You know, you just keep going. And when you're exhausted, you go, get off it, lay down, rest. Get up the next day. Where's the cheese? and we're off again, every day, dragging ourselves out of bed, going after the cheese. And that cheese can mean many things. Okay? But what each of us need to deeply reflect on is all that work, all that energy, all that good effort. At the end of the day, at the end of the week, at the end of my life, has all that energy, all that work produced deep, consistent happiness, ease, openness, calmness, joy in my heart? And this is not to say that, you know, there's not lots of good things in life, right? This is not pessimism. This is not, it means the whole thing, both sides. You know, we're all different here. Some of us have had 50-50. Some of us have had 60-40, 75-25, you know, on both one side. Some of us maybe here go, wow, I've had 95-5. I don't know of which. But, you know, but at the end of the day, has it produced that deep resolution of these three? So this is deep stuff, isn't it? It is worth reflecting on. That's why we come on retreat here. So we can finally stop running. Stop being automatons, stop being robots, and stop and look at our basic humanity, our real experience, and decide for ourselves. So these teachings that I've shared with you today about suffering, just kind of give you a little template, okay? But we have to be like the Buddha. We have to really, you know, in Buddhism we say, first hear the teachings, then reflect on the teachings, and then practice, right? So we hear the teachings today. Now we need to chew on them, right? It's like food, right? You can't, if it just stays on the plate, you can you can look at it, you can contemplate it, but you have to chew it. If it's going to be of any benefit to you, you have to chew it so it can be digested. Once it's digested, then the nutrition or the nutriments or the nourishment of the food then can go throughout the body, right? And nourish it. But first, we have to chew. So these teachings need to be chewed upon, which means reflect. You know, I mean, don't. Please, just because, you know, I'm sitting up here as the teacher, don't, or I'm saying, oh, this is the Buddhist teaching, this doesn't mean you have to accept it. But it means you need to take it very openly, without attachments to anything, and go, is this true? True for me, true for my family, my loved ones, my friends, is this really touching deeply the human experience? Because if we don't resolve this one, you know, we'll never have the energy, we'll never have the aspiration to really heal and transform. We'll make efforts, right? But we'll always, we'll make efforts, then we won't make efforts. We'll be energetic, then we won't be energetic, right? We'll go up, we're on the path, we're off the path. You know, it's like that. It's where many people practice. Because we're still attracted, still thinking, right? Now again, because of the Buddha, because he left his home and found the path of liberation, that means that we don't have to. We don't have to do all that. It doesn't mean you have to leave your home, your families, but we have to begin to see clearly. So again, today we're dealing with the first noble truth, the truth of suffering. Tomorrow we'll go into the causes of suffering, and we'll begin to look at how to liberate ourselves. But again, you know, people may have come here and went, wow, direct path to transformation, healing, right? So everybody's going, some of you may be disappointed right now. Hey, I thought they were going to talk about transformation and healing, and all he's talking about is suffering. Let me assure you, you understand suffering, that you're already starting to heal. Do you understand that? This is very important. You know, when you go to the doctor, You want him to do it, and you're, you know, you're suffering. You want a good workup, don't you? You know, you don't want just a cursory kind of, oh, blah, 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 blah. No, you want to go, hey, what's wrong with me? Right? Come on, check me out. Right? Do a good, you know, I want you to understand the way my body works and what's going on with me. And right? So when you make your diagnosis, you've done it not just a cursory kind of investigation, right? I want a complete workup today. So I want to know what is the condition of my body, and you know, I want you to know all the symptoms of my suffering. So when you make an assessment about what's causing it, right? You see, once we've assessed the problem, and once we understand causation, then it's just a matter of what? Oh, well, you know, and we look over here, we go, all right, well, it's, you know, we can do these kinds of things, not too invasive, you know, we can change the diet, we can do exercise, we can do massage, you know, we can go, maybe needs a little more, maybe needs some medication, maybe we need some surgery, it has to be more invasive, right? Depending on what? On the diagnosis, which is dependent on what? The assessment. Well, first we need to understand the illness. Then we need to understand the cause. When you understand those two, you're already two-thirds of the way there. Not just half. Because now you get it. Oh, and once you get it yourself, you can't be fooled anymore. Right? You'll know the proper road for you in this life. And you will stay with it. But you got to do one and two. You can't just bypass it. And again, please understand, we'll call it dukkha, or we'll call it suffering redefined. We're talking all of it. Right, all three levels. The big sufferings that we can all readily identify with, the suffering of change, which is just worldly life and the back and forth and up and down and attachments, aversions, and the whole deal, you know, which produces all that emotionality. Remember, we talked about drama. There it is. Drama. Up and down, back and forth. Love me, don't love me. Success, failure, who's going on? I mean, it's just endless. Right? You think after a time you get sick of it. Right? And yet we just love it. It's like people who are addicted to soap operas. I mean, you know, these soap operas run for how many years? I don't know. Do they still run? I mean, you know, it's, right? 20, 30, you know, it's like, just, you know, like as if we don't have enough drama in our own life, we're going to go. Anyhow. And then that deepest level. That deep, no matter how things are going, there's always that sense of unease or dissatisfaction or unsatisfactoriness, alienation, angst, disconnection, separation, existential loneliness, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, the wise man with the elephant. Everybody's looking at the same thing, but giving it different names. And that should make you happy. Because in our society, we're supposed to be what? Happy, right? And if you're not happy, you must be doing something wrong, right? Take a course. Read a self-improvement book. Right? You can be happy. You can have the most, you know, you can be fulfilled in everything you do, right? You can have the perfect relationship, perfect job, right? I mean, people become billionaires selling this stuff. This life, the way people run it, will never produce happiness. In a meaningful way, in a complete way, in a consistent way, will never produce ease. It doesn't mean that if you're, you know, the Bill Gates might not have a good life, but, you know, he too is subject to sickness, old age, and death. and he too will leave it all behind. And he may, deep down, may have his dissatisfactions. It can't be helped. You know, nice, eh? They're so pretty. They smell so nicely. But you know what? If I just stood here and looked at it, within a very few minutes, that appreciation would begin to disappear, wouldn't it? And if I kept my nose right up to it, within a very few minutes, it would stop smelling so fragrant. I would get habituated to it. And then I'd have to do what? I'd become a little dissatisfied, restless, and I'd look around for something else to sniff. You know what we call that in Buddhism? Suffering. That even this beautiful flower is a source of suffering. Can you see that? It's just the nature of things. Once we get it, well, we'll talk about how we transform, but right? I could come in here tomorrow if these flowers are here and they'll be what? A little brown around the edge, not smelling so nicely. Then I could be what? Disappointed, right? I could be a little upset. Hey, how come nobody changed my flowers? I mean, I'm the teacher. Shouldn't I get new flowers every day? Right? You know, a little pissed off at people. So these poor flowers become a source of suffering. We do it all the time. And we don't even know it. We think it's normal. The Buddha called that suffering. I think we've done enough today. Enough damage for one day. So please, enjoy your practice today. With Darlene and Angie, you're in good hands. And the other people who will be contributing. Coming back to, we really only have two full days, right? Today and tomorrow, not a lot of time. So please, just jump right in. Right? Jump into the deep end. Many people much more comfortable up on the deck, looking at the water. Do I want to go in? Or some people go in, but they'll go where? Shallow end. Nice and safe. Come on. Jump into the deep end. It may not be what you expect. And you may learn how to swim.